Okie dokie, we're going to move along. We've been talking about this process called six-step reframing. And there's also a way that you can consider doing reframing verbally, and it's called content reframing. So, story first. I was raised in Twin Falls, Idaho, which is a place where the Snake River has a very deep canyon that's almost a mile deep there. Good fishing there. It's where Evel Knievel attempted to fly his motorcycle over the canyon, and he was not successful. He parachuted. He didn't die in that, but it was a big, big, big deal. At any rate, in the canyon are several sets of waterfalls. One called Shoshone Falls, which is actually high as Niagara. It doesn't have quite as much water coming over it as the famous Niagara Falls. It's really, really beautiful, especially in the springtime. So if you're ever in southern Idaho, that's potato and sugar beet country, driving through in the springtime, you want to stop and go to Shoshone Falls because it's truly elegant. Well, I have a good friend that I play forehand piano music with, and about 10 years back, she presented me with a present at Christmas time, and it was a Thomas Moran watercolor. He's quite famous. That was done in the early 1900s of Shoshone Falls. And I mean, it's just a beautiful piece. It was a print. The library was selling prints, and she bought a print for me, one for her two brothers, and one for herself. And I proceeded to take that print of Shoshone Falls, and I looked at the colors in the water, because you know how they do with the water, decided which predominant colors I wanted to emphasize, and then I put two little frames, matted frames, around this picture of Shoshone Falls. And mine were kind of a rose color and a blue. And when you look at I still have this framed and over a bed. When you look at this picture, the water in the waterfalls looks pink and blue. And I got used to looking at it the way I had it framed. Well, I was over at her brother's house at a party once, and I realized he had a copy of that same print, but he had framed it in steel gray. And I looked at it and I thought, that can't be Shoshone Falls. The water doesn't have the same sparkle and everything in it, because it was picking up the color of the frame. And then I realized that the one that she had done was, she had a green frame and mat around hers, and it picked up all the green in the water. So that's a great example of the way you frame something makes a difference in how you see it. It's not the same picture, even though it's the same Thomas Moran oil painting, it's watercolor, it's not the same depending on how it is framed. And so that's what we're playing with when we think of doing reframing. There's a story in the reframing book that was written about an old ancient farmer. Yeah, and then Damon's got the book there. An ancient farmer who's well known for being quite well-to-do because he owns a horse. And he can do lots of things with his horse. And so all of his neighbors think he's well-to-do. And one day, his horse runs away. And all the neighbors come to him and say, oh, so sorry for you. How sad you lost your horse. It's a misfortune for you. And he goes, maybe. That was an interesting response. Well, the next day, his horse came back bringing two wild horses with it. Oh, and all the neighbors said, oh, great fortune. Yeah, you're so lucky. Look, you got three horses now instead of just one. And you're a very lucky man. And he goes, maybe. The following day, his oldest son decides to try to ride one of the wild horses. And in the process of riding it, he is thrown off and his leg is broken. Oh, here comes all the neighbors again. Oh, so sorry to hear of your sorrow. Bad tidings for you now. Your son has broken his leg. It's really bad luck. And he goes, maybe. And the next week, when the army conscription guys come by to find all the eligible young men in the village to take them away to fight in the war, they reject his son because he has a broken leg. And, of course, the neighbors say, oh, lucky you. And again, the farmer goes, maybe. So he knows how to think this might work out, and this might not. He's constantly reframing whatever is going on. And that's what we do when we do this thing called verbal reframing. So nothing has meaning in and of itself. No major behavior has a meaning in and of itself. It's when we interpret and make things mean something. So take, for instance, what we were doing earlier with couple anchoring. Duh. That doesn't really mean anything, does it? It looks funny. If certain meanings are attached to it, then somebody can get very, very, very upset. So the meaning of any event usually depends on the frame within which we perceive it. That determines what happens. When you change the frame, you change the meaning, and when you change the meaning, often somebody's behavior and thinking process about it changes. So that's what we're going to be playing with. How do we do that verbally when someone is stuck with a frame that may or may not work for them? And reframing itself is not new. Do y'all remember the story of the ugly duckling? Yeah. Everybody was making fun of him, right? And he was rejected until, what happens? Oh, he turns into being a beautiful swan. So it's a total reframe on what it's like. And butterflies, you think of the cocoon and the chrysalis, etc. But we're coming up on Christmas. What's the biggest reframe there? Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, yes. He was the laughing stock of all the other reindeer until they wouldn't until one foggy Christmas Eve. You know, Rudolph's red nose becomes very, very popular. So it's not like we're inventing something new when we start talking about reframing. It's been around forever and ever. And there's the reframing book is really good, and it's probably not in print anymore. I'll bet you could get a used copy on Amazon if you wanted one. But there's a story that there's about Leslie Cameron Bandler. Have you been told about Leslie earlier? Anybody heard stories about Leslie? At one point, she was married to Richard Bandler. She wrote a book called They Lived Happily Ever After. And after she and Richard were divorced, they changed the title of the book to Solutions. Reframed it. Anyway, Leslie was an incredible therapist. And if you ever have the opportunity, I believe NLP Comprehensive, that's NLPCO, still might have some videos of hers available. through their website, etc. And if you ever have the opportunity to see her working, she worked a lot. She's probably like almost like a female Tony Robbins, in that what she focused on was state elicitation with people, and she was really good at helping people elicit different states. And there's the example that I had heard ever since I started into NLP about one of Leslie's clients, who was a neat freak, is the term you might give it, an incredible housekeeper to the extreme. And the extreme was that, especially with her living room carpet, she couldn't stand to see any footprints on it, so indentations. Oh, whoops, did I just hit a cord here? Well, this woman couldn't stand to see footprints in the carpet. And so if any of her children or her husband walked across the carpet, she had to run and get the vacuum and get those footprints off the carpet. And she was constantly nagging, and it was really damaging the family relationships. And so she came in to Leslie for some coaching back in those days. And Leslie heard her talking about, this was just so horrible when her family did this. She just couldn't stand it. It made her skin crawl, and it was, you know, just awful. And Leslie said, okay, so I'd like you to sit down, relax in your chair. She got her kind of into a hypnotic state, and she said, you've spent the whole day cleaning your house, and everything is just the way you want it. And you look at the carpet in the living room, and there is not a footprint anywhere near your carpet. And she's watching the lady, and the lady's going, oh, I'm in seventh heaven. And Leslie says, you're there really enjoying how wonderful this feels, and it means your loved ones are nowhere around. Yeah, the people you love are not there. They're missing from your life. And boy, that really jarred the woman out of it. So what Leslie in effect did was say, okay, if that's what you want, the meaning that you have attached to that is that that's the most important thing in your life. But if we flip that to when you see that, what it means is the people you really care about are not there. You're all alone in your house. The people you really love are not available to you. So that's an example of what we call a meaning reframe. We're attaching a new meaning to something that could have happened. You all following that? And you do it with your words. I mean, you know, just by creating a situation. So here's another example that's in the book that I really enjoy. Was this man brought his teenage daughter in for counseling, and his complaint was, she's too stubborn. You know, I ask her to do things, she stands on her own two feet and defies me, and etc. And let's see, who was this with? Oh, it was to Virginia Satir. Somebody was complaining to Satir about this. And this man happened to be the CEO of his own company. He was a very powerful, successful businessman. And so Virginia says, oh, so you probably are use certain qualities in dealing with your employees and with your business that have gotten you it ahead. And as she molded that and teased it out of him, she got him to say he had really stubbornly followed certain rules and regulations that had assisted him in being a successful businessman. And at that point, she said, now, if you look at your daughter, and she had him turn and look at his daughter, I'll bet you have made sure that you have transferred some of those values to your daughter. You can see where Virginia's going with this, you know, that he's complaining she's stubborn, and yet he's had to be stubborn to be successful in his own business. And he goes, yeah, right. Yes, I have taught her how to stand on her own two feet. Yes. And so there's a little bit of a meaning reframe there with stubborn and standing on your own two feet. And then Virginia says, and won't that be a useful skill when some young man has her out on a date and is trying to take advantage of her? And the guy just, that she will have the ability to stand on her own two feet. So that is called a context reframe, where you're saying, where might that be a useful behavior? The first one was a meaning reframe, where you say, what else might something mean? And it's based upon the fact that no behavior, the meaning, no behavior has meaning in and of itself as a behavior. All behaviors could mean anything. Yeah, it depends upon what you attach to that that's going to give it a different meaning. So that's how we think of meaning. Now, up here I put complex equivalence. Have you heard that word before? Well, what we're saying there, in NLP you'll hear people refer to it as a CEQ. I'd never heard of it before until I got involved in NLP. It's where you say, this means that. This causes that. These two things go together. So it's like when somebody says, he makes me mad. Okay, his behaviors create certain responses inside you. And so these things are attached. We create what they call a complex equivalence. X means Y. X equals Y. X causes Y. And then you would consider, I wonder if there is a way we could change the meaning. Now, the other one, with the stubborn behavior, you're saying, okay, every behavior is useful somewhere. We've got to find out. He was complaining about his daughter being stubborn with him at home. So where else might being stubborn be an asset and come in handy? So that's how you think about these two different categories. You can either do a meaning reframe or a context reframe. And they're both useful. You never know when one is going to work. And what are they useful for? Loosening up somebody's limiting frames that they have attached to something. So with that as a background, we're going to do an exercise with it. Are you following along? Making sense to you? This is the way we're going to do our exercise. We're going to have three people groups of three, because it's fun for one person to try, or for both people to try to come up with different reframes. Now, before we even start this, there is no right or wrong. There is no good or bad. Some reframes will work and some will not. Some will work for one person, but they wouldn't work for another person to limit that. You don't know until you deliver it. And of course, you have to deliver reframes with rapport. You don't do it with an irreverent tone of voice. So this is how we're going to do it. Somebody's going to present a complaint in the turn that this means that. You not smiling means you don't like me. You not smiling at me means you don't like me. Being the oldest child in the family means I'll always be the scapegoat. Let's see, how many others can I come up with here that maybe you guys have heard? Or this is the cause of fact. I feel angry when you turn your back on me. So that you're saying somebody else is causing you to feel a certain way. Now, it's important that your complaint kind of come in that form. X means Y. If somebody's making a complaint and it's not that way, you can say, what does that mean to you? And then, this is the strategy you use when you are coming up with the reframe. You think, okay, what else might that mean? It means that to this person, but what else might it mean? It might mean that person's just having a bad day. It might mean that person was internal and didn't even notice you when they didn't speak to you in the hallway. It might not mean anything about you at all. So one person does the complaint, the other two think about this. Okay, what else could it mean? Or where else might it be useful, depending on what you're going to do? So if the person presents a complaint, do you remember? Comparative deletions, we did that with MetaModel, where what's being compared to is left out. That's what the comparative generalization means. Either about yourself or another. You're too greedy, you're too fat, you're too obnoxious, too insincere, or he's too bossy, okay? In what context would the behavior of bossiness be useful? Where? Work. It might be in work, but where? How about in an emergency? There's a fire and somebody needs to take over. Yeah.
A parent?
Huh?
A parent?
It could be. In
it's just
case.
One sentence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's needed.
Sometimes it's needed as a parent. So, yeah, you think about where else, in what context, that means what set of circumstances would this be useful? What if somebody's complaining they're too fat?
Sumo wrestling.
Oh, that would probably be really useful if you're a sumo wrestler. Yeah, okay.
Stuck in a snowbank.
Stuck in a snowbank.
Survival.
Right, survival. Where else could it be useful? To be, when you need to float?
Yeah, my floating.
Where else could it be useful?
Stranded on a desert island without any food.
Without any food, yeah, okay, so. Again, the strategy is to change your internal pictures and go, where might that be helpful? And some of them won't make much sense to you, but some of them might really ring true, that could be really helpful. I use meaning reframes quite a bit when people are attaching meanings that I know are getting them stuck because they're thinking too rigidly about it. So we're going to play with this, and that's exactly what this is. Whenever we're doing exercises with verbal language things, it's play, because you have no idea how the other person's going to respond. So we're groups of three. Say it's Sky and Nancy and I as a group of three. I'm going to come up with a complaint that fits one of these forms. And when I say it, then these two are going to try and figure out what might be a good reframe. Take your time, okay? So you don't just try to come up with something off the top of your head. You go, which form is that she's giving us? And then you think of your reframe and you signal me and I state my complaint again and you deliver your reframe. Now, your job, your job is to notice what, if anything, shifts when you deliver your reframe. Once in a while, you actually see smoke come out of people's ears. Do you know what that means?
It's working.
Whoa, that one really landed. Sometimes you see, huh? And you go, didn't go anywhere at all. And again, there's no right or wrong. You go, well, that one didn't work. And then Sky has thought up her reframe. She tells me to offer my complaint again, and she does it. Okay? And then we switch. We're just going to keep going around and around and around until we've had lots of experience playing with these different forms of reframing. It's a play game to notice what happens. Yes?
In a real-life situation, how do you deliver these beyond building rapport, how do you deliver these reframes without presupposing that you know what the person is really experiencing, or, you know, where it doesn't sound like you're giving them a different story that they ought to be believing?
You do it with sincerity and curiosity. Again, that curiosity, like we were playing around with the meta model. And again, you know, a lot of these patterns came from Virginia Satir, and she would go, I'm really curious. You're saying that this means that. Could it mean something else? And if so, I wonder what that would be. She would do it in that tone of voice. It wouldn't be, no, it doesn't mean that at all. It's not about you. You know, you don't do it that way, or people will for sure reject it. Like, I know what's better. But you're curious about, could that be useful somewhere else? Or could you attach a different meaning? And you may add some extra words in there that are pacing words or curiosity words.
I think that backtrack she just uses a key element in those situations where it's sensitive.
Backtracking what you heard first.
Like, so because I did this, you feel angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you did just backtrack it.
Right.
What you said was, I'm curious about that. You feel
right,
this way.
Uh-huh.
And then, so I think that's a key element in that, too.
Well, because then that's making sure the person's following you. They're on your same wavelength. Yeah. You ready to play? Lance. Okay, so offer a complaint, and let's play with it as a group. Any complaint you might have about yourself, somebody else, what something means?
I don't have enough time to play video games.
That's not in one of these forms, so. let me help you with that. So you don't have enough time to play video games. What does that mean?
So I'm sorry, I'm really confused right now, so I don't know. Uh-huh.
So you're confused?
Yeah.
Confused about?
Just outside me giving an example right now, the process that we're trying to keep them confused.
Right. I'm just helping you understand.
How is that a problem that you don't have enough time to play video games?
Or what does it mean?
You don't play games, do you?
What does that mean?
That I wish I had more time.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. So not having time to play video games means you wish you had more time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What else could not having enough time mean?
That I work too much.
Oh. Okay, do you see how that... Does that put a totally different frame? It's not about...
I see, okay. So it's taking whatever the complaint is and just, in a sense, reshaping it so that there's a different perspective.
Think about this. Think about, okay, what would I put around the outside of it that might make it look different? Does that help clear it up?
Yes.
Yeah. Marilyn?
Well, I've got one that I've dealt with the child.
Okay, let's hear it.
I feel scared when I hear a siren because I think it's going to my house.
Mm-hmm.
So then I tried to reframe it saying, well, could you imagine that when you hear that siren that someone is getting help?
Mm-hmm.
Not that you're afraid it's going to your house, but that someone is getting help.
And?
And it helped. She was able to realize it wasn't just about going into her house, but help is coming regardless of where it was.
Yeah,
it wasn't
that's a good example. That's a good example.
So with Lance, did you actually reframe, or did you just use meta to get to a better, a different way of phrasing?
I used meta to get to a different way of phrasing it first, and then he reframed it himself. Oh, well, maybe it means I'm working too much. Yeah. It is still a complaint. Yes, but it's...
The point was to take like a complaint seen in a different way where you wouldn't feel as bad about it.
Well, and it may be giving him some answers... So, and then we could move into the other form. So, you're working too hard?
Sure.
You're too much of a hard worker. Gee, I wonder where else working hard, where that might or be a good, useful skill. Let's think about that. When you have a problem to solve in your house, or when you're thinking about, I really want to understand this, the harder you work at it, maybe the better results you'll get. It's just a matter of playing with it.
Yeah, you'll obviously continue to work harder at balancing your work and play with that skill.
Little hypnotic language thrown in there. Okay, it will be easier if you actually get in the process
yes.
of doing it. So,
do it.
It's a. Can I flip back? I wrote a couple of statements down. We're doing groups of three. So, when with meaning, we're talking that no behavior in and of itself has a meaning until you attach a meaning to it. Yeah, you can make any behavior mean anything. You can make, think of this. When a kid is called to the principal's office and he's got a grin on his face like this and the teacher, and then the principal says, stop smirking. And the kid goes, it means I'm nervous. This means I'm nervous. This doesn't have anything to do with me smirking or making fun of you. So, you know, that behavior of turning the corners of your mouth up doesn't mean you're defying the principal or smirking at the situation or anything like that. It means I'm feeling anxious about being here. Okay? Not mocking him. What else could it mean? Yeah, I'm feeling incongruent. Anxious, nervous, happy that I got out of class.
I'm happy to see you.
Thanks for getting me out of class. I was really miserable in there today. Yeah, yeah.
The principal is the kid's mom.
Right.
Oh, you're going to punish me and send me home. That sounds awful.
Okay, so find two other people, and we're rotating around. We're just practicing. It's really fun to try to figure out where something might be useful or where what something else might mean. Yes.
How long do you want this to go?
I want this to go for 15 minutes. Okay. Yeah. And well, you're rotating. Just keep rotating around. Let's do it for 15 minutes. Because take your time to think about it and notice what happens.